twice a week, every week, all year round. We are super excited to get into our third NFL season covering. We started in the middle of the season a couple seasons ago. It's been awesome going through two full off seasons with you guys. It's been awesome getting into our third season now. Week one, we're going to be doing this again every Monday morning. During the real football, actual football, we break down every single game and give you the key takeaways that you need to know from this weekend's action. Today, we're going to probably hit several different key topics just kind of bounce around the league a little bit, because some of these games, there was not anything to take away from, because nobody who is going to be playing when it counts actually played any football. I see Samantha and Shadi have joined us. Samantha, how are you doing this morning?
Doing good. How are you? I'm excited there's football, sort of.
Yes.
Almost football. Enough. Yes. It's close enough, right?
The simulacrum of football, a diet football, something that'll scratch the itch. Shadi, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, trying to figure out and remember how this Twitter Spaces thing worked after it's been a couple of months. But I'll tell you what, it was both refreshing and horrifying to see so much near football-like product this weekend. Also, like, back in the saddle for the first time, like, really running websites NFL coverage, or at least assisting in running a website's NFL coverage for the first time in a bunch of years. I'm a little rattled right now.
I believe it. This is Three and Out, your national NFL podcast. We've got three sports media pros, me, Ty Shelter from 538, Samantha Bunton from NBC Sports, and Michael Shadi, who's just referenced the 33rd team. Shadi, before we get into the actual football, how are things going over at the new site?
Man, the new site is going really well. Got some more names to announce this week that will be nice. Really exciting. It's very different.
And to be clear, when he says names, he means names. We're talking Bill Parcells, Chris Long, like the list of new contributors at the 33rd team are unbelievable.
Yeah, I honestly think we've assembled the best coaching staff this side of like the 90s Green Bay Packers and maybe then some. But right. Honestly, just it's incredible to get to work with a bunch of people who've been so close to the game and also just see how normal they are. Like, you know, chatting with Chuck Pagano and Marty Morningwig, it just regularly makes my day. Getting to reach out and, you know, text Tom LaWand a question and have him get right back to me. My favorite, though, is like our super fan of super fans is head coach Tom Crean, formerly of Marquette, formerly of Indiana.
Oh, wow.
He's also the Harbaugh's brother-in-law. And so he just loves football, and he is on everything we do. He will, like, send us typos that we need to correct because he reads things very closely. And he is fantastic. And I could literally – I would be like, hey, Tom, can you help me move this weekend? And I'm guaranteed that he would, like, pay for the U-Haul because he's just that dude. So it's fun to get to know these guys at a level that just supersedes anything you see from them on TV.
That is very cool. Lots of stuff to get to. And I guess in terms of regular guys and, you know, Tom Crean getting involved in football, obviously basketball coach, there's a lot of overlap. Let's go to New England first. Patriots with a very interesting approach to their offensive coordinator position. They split reps, like in true preseason fashion. Matt Patricia calls the plays for the first series, the first team. Joe Judge calls the plays for the second team. I don't think either of them got very high marks. We've been tracking this story just like everyone else all off season. What did you guys think, Samantha? What is your key takeaway from this mess with the Patriots?
I mean, is this an indicator of who is the first string play caller and who is the second string play caller? That's what I want
to
know.
Camp battle. I love it.
Position battle. This is what we want, right? This is exciting. Oh, my goodness. Oh, what a disaster. I don't know what he's really doing. We don't ever know what he's really doing. So, like, I'm not even going to try to, oh, well, what Bill is really doing is, because we don't know. We have no idea. But this seems like a terrible idea, right? Like, why would you do this? Oh, my gosh. I feel like this is going to end really bad. But we've been wrong about this before. So we'll see, I guess. But this feels bad. This feels very bad.
So I'll pass on some secondhand commentary via some of our contributors. Bill Cowher loves this. Bill Cowher just thinks this is the best thing ever because of what you said, Samantha. Competition is great. Competition is competition. The only way you can figure out who your best play caller is to have them call plays. I, like 10 rungs down at my job, coaching, I get to call like a handful of plays every once in a while, and it's sort of that. Like, here's what you did wrong, here's what you knew better. I'm sure they're having those discussions. The fact that that's happening at the NFL level is a little disconcerting to me, and I agree with you, Samantha, because you didn't go out and hire like a professional offensive play caller. You grabbed the dude who, you know, played offensive line, sure, but has been a defensive coach his entire life, and Joe Judge, who's never been around the offense, and you're entrusting your offense. The other sort of secondhand commentary, though, is Matt Cassel, who, you know, played for the Patriots when they added McDaniels, said Belichick did this basically the same thing, that you walked into the offensive room, and it was just way too many cooks in the kitchen, like Skarnecchia was, you know, not calling plays, but designing the offense, and you know, McDaniels was there, and you know, like 10 other people were in that room and vying for, like, jockeying for position, and it worked out. Like, Josh McDaniels was fine. I don't know if it's gonna work out quite the same way this time. I don't think we're gonna look back and be like, man, wow, I can't believe Matt Patricia was ever a defensive coach, because you know, he's the greatest offensive mind of our generation. I don't think we're gonna go there. But I do think the Patriots are going to be fine. The two takeaways I had from that game was, one, it looked like they were pushing the ball down the field more than last season, which might have just been personnel, might have just been matchups, but I liked what I saw from that perspective. But it's their defense. Their defense is going to be one of the top defenses in the NFL yet again, and this is going to be a team that is just fine.
Yeah, from a chaos perspective, of course, we always root for chaos. Samantha is our chaos goblin. We love stories. We root for stories. And, you know, the switch totally flipped for me on it would be a fantastic story if it turned out that way, right? That Matt Patricia and or Joe Judge, whichever, maybe they end up co-coordinators, you know, the you work the gas and brakes, I'll steer method of offensive coordinating, you know, maybe this works and, you know, Mac Jones has an unbelievable year and the Patriots win the Super Bowl. It would be a great story. And I always love to pop bubbles and you know, kill sacred cows and whatever all else in terms of this game, feeling like there's mystical knowledge that people can't possibly know. And you know, you are born a defensive coordinator and you have no idea how to tell, you know, an offensive line protection from a receiver tree, you know, like a route tree. Like, okay, obviously these guys have quite a bit of overlap in what they do. So it would be great. I also don't think that that's going to happen, but we shall see. And of course, Bill Belichick has earned more leash than anybody else to do whatever he wants with his coaching staff.
It actually happens, Ty. You walk into a cave, an old man says it's dangerous to go alone, take this. And you get that. And that headset then determines what you coach. Right. That's how it actually.
I mean, it makes sense because that's what they say it with receivers and cornerbacks, right? On, you know, like the first day of freshman football, they line up all the fast kids and throw them a football, and everyone who catches it is a wide receiver, and everyone who has stone hands is a cornerback, and that's just how it goes. Let's move on. We've got other stuff to get to, and actually, those of you out there listening live on Twitter Spaces, this is 3 and Out, a national NFL podcast featuring three sports media pros. We do this every single week. Don't always do it live on Twitter Spaces, but we are checking things out as we go into the season. We do record every Monday morning. We put it in the main feed, whether it's live or just recorded, and then midweek, we have a big show with a big guest, folks like Adam Schefter, like Peter King, like Mina Kimes we just had last month. Big, big guests who come on and help us explain what's going on, all the hottest topics in the world of football. Let's move on. A hot topic. There is no hotter topic. Deshaun Watson apologizes, sort of, before the game, goes out, gets booed, goes 1 for 5 for 7 yards. And actually, I went to Samantha first, but Samantha, former lifelong Browns fan, now lifelong, or at least until the end of the Deshaun Watson contract, Bills fan. What did you think of this?
Every time they do something, it feels more and more permanent, the Bills fan thing. Yeah. I don't think I can go back. The apology, I'm using air quotes even though you can't see me, I mostly felt bad for Aditi. I was to stand next to him and deal with
that. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
That's a bad gig, and she now would be free, and I'm sorry she had to do that, but he looks like a 10-year-old who was, like, embarrassed to be talking about something. Like, if you watch the body language, watch the posture, he's, you know, he looked like he was about to start giggling. It was just, oh my gosh, it was so bad. And, you know, he stands right there and says, I didn't do anything wrong, but I'm sorry for the women I impacted. And you're like, well, then what are you apologizing for?
Yeah.
Well, what even is this? What, you're sorry, this is this the I'm sorry this happened to you? Like, when people, you know, like, third party it. Like, so sorry this thing that I did happened to you, but I'm not taking any responsibility for it. But anyway, it's, of course, somewhat vindicating to watch him play poorly. I don't actually think that means anything, but it does kind of go with, and this is the thing I'm kind of more focused on right now, is that I've been saying for a long time, and I'm not the only one, that this guy hasn't played football in a really long time. Like, he's gonna be rusty when he gets back out there, which is something I think people need to take into consideration when they predict that, well, as soon as Deshaun comes back from the suspension, the Browns are gonna win all their games. It's like, man, there's a bit of rust that has to be knocked off there. You can't just get back out there. It's been a very, very, very long time since he's been active in a real NFL game, and I'm not sure preseason counts either, but yeah, it wasn't great. It doesn't mean Deshaun Watson is something terrible. I wish that was true, but it's not. But it does mean that there's going to be a sort of adjustment period back into the speed of the game, because this stuff is not something that you can just dip out of for a couple of years and then come right back and look like your old self.
Samantha said it all about the air quote apology. I actually did air quotes when you said it, Ty. So the fact that she was doing what she said it also made a lot of sense to me. So I won't belabor that point, just because I agree with everything she said. Play on the field, like, I was just giggling like a schoolboy that he didn't seem to remember how to run an NFL offense, you know, and I hope that continues. I've always thought that the best possible case scenario has been that he comes in after a lengthy suspension and doesn't play well. That would just be the best end, quote unquote, end to this story, or at least the pickup to this story, because he's going to be in Cleveland a long time, but I would love to see him with egg on his face for a good portion of the beginning of that. Where I want to go, though, is, like, the Browns are just circling the wagon in a weird way. Like, the Joel Bedonio quote about, oh, it's Browns against the, or Browns versus the world again, like, because they were getting booed. Like, no. I honestly think Mike Florio said it best, that of course you're getting booed. You're the visitors in a stadium, like, that hasn't had football in a long time. Of course you're getting booed. Like, that's what happens. But Deshaun specifically getting booed was also always going to happen, because anytime, I mean, go back to, like, grade school basketball, kids got glasses, there's chance from the idiots about his glasses. Kids got a weird haircut, there's chance about his weird, like, if you have a thing, a specific thing, like, the Cameron Crazies do this really well, the great crowds in sports will always find the thing to pick at. And Deshaun is now that thing for the Browns. Like, this was always going to happen. And pretending like you're somehow the victim, or like this is somehow a reason to circle the wagons and get your dander up, and, you know, it's quote unquote Browns versus the world, that is just nonsense. And someone needs to get the other Browns players who aren't Deshaun Watson, because Deshaun Watson, from a tone and, you know, tenor perspective, is just, you know, a lost cause. But somebody needs to get everyone else in a room and be like, this is how we talk about the situation, because we collectively all look like idiots already. We collectively already look morally bankrupt already, but we don't need to continue that in every single time we talk to the media for the next 3 years.
Yeah, and it's strange to see that sort of attempt to, like, us versus the world, when most of the Browns fans are not necessarily on his side. We talked to Charles Robinson a couple weeks ago from Yahoo, broke the story about Judge Sue Robinson, you know, former federal Judge Sue Robinson, basically telling both parties straight up, I'm not giving the NFL what they want, like months ago in this, you know, in the arbitration hearing. And, you know, he was saying the Browns kind of, some people in the Browns kind of asked him, like, you know, took the temperature, like, what's the vibe? Like are people with us or against us? He's like, and I told him it's like 90-10 against, like it's people in the Browns building. It's, you know, some Browns fans, and then basically everybody else is against you and against this guy. And I don't know how you turn around and create a unified message as a team. But of course, this is football, this is the NFL, this is elite sports, and you will turn anything into a reason to try and circle the wagons and get your dander up. And you can use anything as fuel internally. Externally, Shadi, 100% right. They need to figure out a message that works and doesn't hitch their wagons to whatever Deshaun got made to say at gunpoint in the press conference. I guess we are not at gunpoint. We are happy to be here on Twitter Spaces talking to you guys. If you have any questions, if you want to jump up on stage, definitely raise your hand. Let us know. We'll let you guys in and get to your live questions. I now have Shadi just requested to speak. I don't know what happened there. but okay. So this is live on Twitter Spaces. I'm actually going to throw quote unquote to break because, again, we're recording this. We're going to put this in our podcast feed. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, we go twice a week. We do this reaction show on Monday. Then we go midweek every week with a big guest. Go to 3outpod.com. That's our website. All of our feeds, all of our subscriptions, everything you want is there. Doesn't matter what your podcatcher is, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever it is, it's all in there. We're also at 3outpod on Twitter, which definitely follow, and 3outpod on Instagram. Remember, 3outpod.com for all the feeds. And I'm going to put a break, quote unquote, right here. You won't hear a break, but in the recorded version, there will be one. We'll be right back here on 3andOut, your national NFL podcast. Okay, we're back on 3andOut, your national NFL podcast preseason key takeaways. We got stuff to look at. Guys, I wanted to talk about Falcons, Lions. We hit the Lions pretty hard. And then, of course, we had Hard Knocks last week. The first episode had Jeremy Reisman from Pride of Detroit on as our big guest to kind of break down what that meant, all the shots of the coaches, all of those storylines. There was one guy we didn't see very much of at all in that first episode of Hard Knocks. That's Jared Goff. He looked real good on that first drive. It was with 75 yards, 3 of 4, touchdown. All right, sweet. That was it. And guys, I hate to even say it, but you talk to people like Jeremy Reisman who have been at camp, and it's like a closely guarded secret. All the beat writers are murmuring this in very hushed tones because they don't want to be the ones that get this stuck to them if it doesn't work out. But the rumors are that Jared Goff did not just look good in that preseason game. He's been looking real good all training camp. Shadi, are you buying this? Are you thinking that this is for real, that Jared Goff is giving us a glimpse of a true return to form?
I'm not buying that specific dovetail of the story. I'm looking at the fact that as we finished the 2021 season, Jared Goff was playing much better than when he started the 2021 season. And if he can just continue that, I will accept that. I do not think training camp practices against a very suspect Lions defensive backfield, nor do I think anything done against the Atlanta Falcons is, you know, representative of anything. Like, you're playing against vanilla defenses in the preseason. You're playing against, you know, maybe not the exact starting unit. You're playing against another really terrible football team. Like, this isn't the Legion of Boom out there for the Atlanta Falcons. They're pretty terrible. So I'm not taking any of that without just gigantic grains of salt, because you're going to get to week one and all of a sudden there come the blitz packages, there come the line stunts, there come the disguised coverages that no one uses in the preseason. So Jared Goff can continue to look really good. I had a very extended conversation with my younger son this weekend, who every time he sits down to a football game, well, who do you want to win? that's the only question that he feels is relevant. Like, who do you want to win? And so I had to tell him, like, these games don't matter. Like, they really don't. Like, I'm not just saying it. They just don't matter. And I was reminded, and I told him about how, you know, once upon a time, the Detroit Lions looked very good and went 4-0 in the preseason. And then 0-16. Like, there are just some reminders that I think we need. And I'm, as much as anybody, I get really excited about football. You know, I got really excited about Malik Willis this week, and I got really excited about Jack Sanborn. Yep. There were some really good performances. Shoddy,
quick corollary, Desmond Ridder in that same game. Lots of draft picks very excited about what he showed.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I thought the rookie quarterbacks stood out this weekend just from a preparedness to play perspective. And I think that just goes to, you know, the acceleration of how similar the college and NFL games have become, the acceleration of how, like, big college programs run their program now, which is very professional, very NFL-like. There is not as steep a learning curve. And it also goes to just, you know, some of these guys, Kenny Pickett, Desmond Ridder, Malik Willis, all had to get ready quicker because they're in legitimate battles. And I don't think we look around and have thought that about some of these guys, but I honestly think there's, you know, an alternate universe out there where all three of these guys end up playing football this season, meaningful football this season.
So I'm going to come back to the original question that Jared Goff.
Yes. Yes, I was going to reset that for you if you didn't.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about Desmond Ridder so far, so good. But yeah, I think that we tend to overvalue preseason performance for people who we either want to do well or are unsure about, and then we undervalue it for people who are more established. So it's, this is a constant problem. I mean, Shadi, you brought up the whole, you know, your kid saying to you, well, who do you want to win? I mean, my mom does this too every week. Well, who do you want to win? Like, it's preseason. It doesn't matter, right? And there's so much going on out there that has nothing to do with what would happen in a real game. So for Goff, it's, and I want to believe that Jared Goff can be better and will be better. But I think if we take anything away from this, generally speaking, I don't think you get much out of a quarterback in a preseason unless you're looking at it compared to that same quarterback in a roughly similar situation at another time. So does he look better? Yeah, I think that's very possible, and always defer to the guys who are on the Lions beat, who stand around watching this team at practice every single day. They're going to notice things, whether it's in practice against a crappy defense or not, that are comparatively better about what he's doing than what maybe he looked like a year ago. And as was pointed out here, he played better in the second half. And guys, Jared Goff, once upon a time, a very long time ago, had a nice season this one time and ended up in the Super Bowl. And it's because everything around him was working right. And he tends to be one of those guys where when things around him are clicking, he can kind of get it together and do okay. And so to me, what I take away from this is that the Lions are a better team than they were a year ago. What's going on around Jared Goff is allowing Jared Goff to be the best Jared Goff that he can be. So whatever the ceiling is, and it's not that high, but it's also not as bad as, you know, basement Jared Goff. So if things around him are improving, then yeah, Jared Goff's going to look better. But also it's week one of the preseason. Everyone sees calm down.
Yeah, I was trying to find the tweet I saw over the weekend. Aculana Rune 2 replied to you. This is at Luke Braun, that got retweeted into my feed. Remember, preseason only matters when it confirms your priors. That's the energy, pretty much. Like, if things look the way you expected them to look, that you put you know, you wrote a column about, or you have a take about, like, then and it matches that, great, you get to big it up. And I think that's where I'm at. And I think Jared Goff could be very, very good. I think Hard Knocks is going to show exactly why, you know, Dan Campbell switched from Anthony Lynn to himself in the middle of the year last year, and that switch in performance correlates with having someone who, you know, if Anthony Lynn was demanding and expecting excellence from Jared Goff and it wasn't happening, switch to someone who is establishing first love and trust and care for Jared Goff as a person and as a player, and everything else follows. I think Goff is a confidence player, to borrow a phrase from the other kind of football, European football, better known as soccer. And when you have a confidence player, someone who gets built up by that coach, who has that voice in his ear, and everything's built around him, he trusts the offensive line in front of him, and he trusts wide receivers that when he throws them, they're going to go up and make plays. Trust guys like DJ Chark, trust guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown. He can just pull the trigger and trust them to make a play. I think that's everything when it comes to Jared Goff's performance. One guy that we are having trouble trusting, Jordan Love, got a whole half of football against the 49ers, and he did throw two touchdowns, but he also threw three interceptions. On the other side of the field, the other team's quarterback of the future, Trey Lance, goes 4 of 5 for 91 yards and a touchdown with a big home run strike, and then got sat. And you have to think the arrow is pointing up for Trey Lance. Jordan Love, I don't know what to make of this. Samantha, what do you make of this?
I think he's a career backup, and I think he will continue to prove that he is a career. I mean, speaking of confirming narratives, like, there it is. Like, Jordan Love is not very good.
Yeah.
Look, there he is again, not being very good again. So, yeah, I just have never seen anything out of him that has that spark where you're like, wow, this guy's kind of a mess, but he could be great. He's just never done anything that makes that appear to be true. And I know there's competing narratives in the Packers timeline of like, well, Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre for a very long time. No, that's not what this is. He's just not a good quarterback. Like, I don't really have anything else to say about it. He's incredibly unimpressive out there. I don't think he processes well. I don't think he moves well. He just doesn't have it. And I think that the Packers know it. I don't think this is going to come as a surprise to anyone.
Agree with what Samantha just said. I think there's also a world in which you swap those two, and because of personnel and scheme, their play evens out a little bit, because Trey Lance gets to be with Kyle Shanahan, who is well known to be very good for young quarterbacks. Whatever he does to his scheme to pare it down, I don't want to say dumb it down, but do some things differently for young quarterbacks, and especially guys with Trey Lance's ability. He had RG3 and did similar things where there's a lot of play action, a lot of zone running, opens up a lot of passing lanes, a lot of, holes in the secondary that might not otherwise be there in a timing offense like what the Green Bay Packers are running without a lot of their top wide receivers, who all came off the PUP list after this game. So Jordan Love's not only playing with the backups, but he's playing with like the backups against, supposedly whatever the 49ers tried out as their top defensive unit, or whatever the opponents tried out as their top defensive unit. So I would just say, I don't often love, in hindsight, in the moment, I will absolutely get caught up in a lot of these performances. In hindsight, I would just say, I don't know if we've seen the barometer of what Jordan Love is from this performance. If he gets like extended time in a third preseason game with the top unit against the top unit, because they decide to sit Aaron Rodgers, that will be a better barometer. But failing that, I agree. My prior conceptions are exactly what Samantha said. But I don't know if I would say that this is like rock solid proof that my preconceived notions were true.
All right. my preconceived notions are the Cowboys, the team people love to talk about, team people love to hate. Sometimes team that people hate to love. Commit 17 penalties for 129 yards while scoring just 7 points against the Houston Texans. And of course, guys, this is one of those games where, the starters weren't playing, maybe even the backups weren't playing. This is we're rooting for laundry territory. None of these players, especially the ones with stars on their helmets, are ones that are going to be making plays when the plays count for Dallas. But do we throw this out, Shadi, or do we confirm our priors a little bit about the organization level and the execution level of the Cowboys and their coaching staff?
I would say this, and this goes to a point I was going to make a couple of, you know, topics ago about the Lions, that when you're rooting for laundry, as it were, especially early on in the preseason, one of the places you can look to really, I think the two major places you can look to see how things are going to go this season are in the trenches, because a lot of times starters do play, or at least like top backups end up playing extended time, and in the defensive backfield, because you can look at a team like the Seattle Seahawks and just be like, whoa, their defense does not have it currently figured out. The Steelers passed all over them this weekend, and it's not a level of talent thing. It's just they don't seem to know where they're going right now, and that's troublesome, even early on in the preseason, because you were supposed to supposedly be ready for this game. Same thing in the trenches. You can look at teams like Detroit, like Las Vegas, and I think Dallas, and see some positivity with how the offensive and defensive line plays, and be like, you know, we're not seeing starters out here yet. We're not seeing the guys that we want to see. Like, Cooper Rush does not matter to the Dallas Cowboys season unless some things have gone terribly wrong. That being said, like, I came away from the Dallas game like, some of my preconceived notions about their offensive line maybe not being up to snuff this season, I was like, maybe things are a little bit better. I don't think they're back to, like, heyday, but people forget that you know, Zach Martin is the best guard in the NFL. Like, he just is. And there are a lot of other people who are very close to that. But if I had to go to war with one dude, and they made a really good pick in the first round that I thought was really terrible at the time because I didn't know enough about the guy, but everything since then has looked good. Everything in the preseason game looked good. So there are some things I think, as bad as... or as much as I want to drag the Dallas Cowboys, I came away from that game like this might be them returning to form in certain ways.
My only real concern here is the unusually high number of procedural penalties, which seems like a bit of a red flag concerning discipline in general. And
also a way in which they're returning to form.
That's true too. welcome back. but yeah, I think that, you know, that worries me, because that's very, you know, as Shadi just pointed out, that's very Cowboys like. And that is something I think that kind of creeps through an entire organization, and it's not really about who's out on the field necessarily. It can be to an extent, but at that volume, that speaks to a greater problem than the organization. And I mean, Mike McCarthy, yeah, so I haven't changed my opinion on that in the offseason, in case I'm wondering. But yeah, and the Cowboys are going to be fine. I mean, this is like not really an indication of anything. There was not really anyone involved in this game on their end who was like particularly critical to this in any real meaningful way. So I know it's the Cowboys. Everyone's going to overreact. That's their whole brand, right? Like, come overreact to us.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
The whole brand. So... great, good for them. People are going to freak out, and then there's going to be a swing back the other way. How dare you? It's only the preseason. But, yeah, fine, great. I am a little bit worried about sloppy play and discipline. But we say that every year, right? I mean, Mike McCarthy isn't great at this stuff. This organization has been historically undisciplined about this stuff. So that worries me a little bit, and I think that if we see this in week one, we're going to, you know, again, confirmation bias. Aha, there it is. And maybe we won't.
Yeah.
Maybe we won't. But that's the thing that stood out to me, is like, ooh, whoa, this is probably not good. The rest of it, I don't think matters. Generally speaking, Cowboys are going to be fine.
All right, I think you guys are right where I am. I want to get to one last topic. If anybody out there in the Twitter space wants to ask us anything, now's the time. Raise your hand, request to speak. We will get to your question. But I wanted to touch one last thing. Shadi, you brought it up. Great day for rookie quarterbacks Malik Willis. This is a storyline. This is my off-season hobby horse. Malik Willis is a day two guy. Not that he can't be good, but he can't be the number two overall pick. He's a second or third rounder, not a franchise building block right out of the gate. And he goes out and did some Malik Willis things for the Titans and lost to the Ravens. Scrambled, freelanced, made touchdowns happen, created plays out of nothing. And then got sat after going 6 for 11 passing, and head coach Mike Vrabel said that we wanted him to throw the ball, and he didn't, so he switched. Curious, because I think everyone was raving about Malik Willis and the plays that he was making, and it's interesting to hear his head coach say that he wasn't seeing what he wanted to see from him. What do you guys think, Samantha? What did you think about this?
I mean, again, it's preseason, you know, but also, like, to be fair, these guys, like, they have no other way to prove themselves to us other than in a game that we're all going to call meaningless if it suits our narrative, or say is meaningful if that suits our narrative. So, yeah, I mean, I think that he and Ritter in particular it caught my attention. And that's what you want at this point, right? Is for something to catch your attention and say, okay, like, this is something that you should be paying attention to and tracking. Like, Kenny Pickett, sure. I mean, all these guys looked basically all right. It doesn't really mean anything. But I think sometimes it's good, especially for people who everybody kind of had doubts about, you know, were they overdrafted? Can they really be anything? Oh, this is the worst quarterback class in however long. None of these guys are going to turn into anything. So the fact that they can even get out there and hang is very encouraging. The one I'm paying a lot of attention to is obviously Pickett and Mitchell Trubisky, because it seems like a pretty legitimate quarterback battle. I mean, what do you even do with that? Who knows? I mean, come back to my mom again, who comes running in and is like, I heard Mitchell did well apropos of nothing. And I'm like, who's Mitchell? And I'm like, oh, right, Mitch Trubisky. And keeps changing his name. Nobody can remember what we're supposed to call him. Anyway, Mitchell, whatever. I guess he did all right. Pickett did slightly better. I think, I don't know what to make of that. He would have been going against weaker competition, so something to keep in mind, but that's the one I think that I'm focused on more than Malik Willis, more than Desmond Ridder, who are probably the better long-term prospects. I don't trust Kenny Pickett at all with his small hands. It's not his hands, guys. I just don't trust him. But for now, that's probably the one that's going to have the most real-world implications in the immediate future this season, so that's kind of the thing that I'm hung up on and that I want to go back and watch again and go, okay, is there anything here to take away from this, or is this just, yeah, it's the first week of the preseason?
Yeah, I'm in a weird spot with all of these quarterbacks. You know, Ritter was my favorite in this class. And I actually really liked Kenny Pickett, but to a certain extent, like, I scout for the College Gridiron Showcase, which is a third-tier event. And I really liked Kenny Pickett when I was like, hey, I think we should try to get Kenny Pickett for the CGS. And then he had a fantastic season. And it was like, okay, we're clearly not getting him. But then it was like, okay, he's going to the Senior Bowl. That makes sense. Okay, he's a first-round pick. I'm not so sure about that one. Okay, he's going to win this quarterback battle. I don't think he should. And, you know, we're talking preconceived notions. Like, Mitchell went out and did light things up, according to your mom. And he did. It was true. But some of that was just the Seahawks secondary, again, was so terrible that all of the quarterbacks look good. I am, like, Mason Rudolph's least biggest fan ever, and he went out and looked fantastic. And then Kenny Pickett came in against scrubs but played with scrubs and looked like an all-pro at times. I don't know if you take anything from that game. Back to Malik Willis, I think there are some nuances to the Tennessee offense that Malik Willis will not understand until he reps them live, because the Liberty offense was not, you know, a very complex thing that he ran, but we saw the physical tools. He was running outstandingly. And I think when you've got a running game like Tennessee, you can amplify that running game by having a quarterback who can simply pull out of a mesh point and boot out the backside and run for 80 yards. That's going to help King Henry a ton. like King Henry could be at his best with Malik Willis at quarterback, but there's also some nuances to sometimes you have to pull out of that mesh and then throw the ball. And we know he can throw. He uncorked like a 45-yard pass that was the stuff of dreams. But they clearly wanted to see more. They clearly wanted to see him toss the ball out around a little bit, and he's just not there. That's not the game that he played in college. That's not who he's been. And you have to get those reps. You have to get him, you know, live in training camp, live in joint practices, live in preseason games. And Mike Vrabel sort of coming out publicly and saying that should push Malik Willis to do it better next time. And if it doesn't, you know, Tannehill's going to win this job very easily, because this is not a team that is going to play games at the quarterback position. They are going to, you know, win games with their defense, win games with their running game, and not allow a rookie quarterback to make mistakes and cost them games.
Yeah, so ADHD made me forget that Samantha had told the story about her mother. And so when Shadi said, yeah, Mr. Trubisky came in and lit it up according to your mom, I thought he was making a your mom joke, and I thought it was incredibly funny. And then because I have ADHD, I couldn't think about anything else the entire time Shadi was talking. Mitchell Trubisky lit it up according to your mom. You lit your mom up.
That should be, it should be a Trubisky jersey, but then just have like your mom's favorite
mom player. Trubisky number.
It works too well. And you know, for my sake, I'll just say Malik Willis again. This is what I expected to see, right? Like, oh yeah, he can run around. He can make plays. He can execute. And it doesn't surprise me that he's continuing to step up and do those things when theoretically the competition is higher. Obviously, this isn't the same thing as a full, you know, starters versus starters, Blitz are live, you know, lights are on, score at the end matters situation. But and it also doesn't surprise me that he wasn't executing everything that he was being asked to execute by the X's and the O's and the arrows and the dashes on the paper. I think Mike Vrabel is doing the right thing by challenging him to get better at following the chalk and following the lines and coloring inside of those. And I think we're going to continue to see him try and do that, because from what everyone says, that like that's all he's about, is trying to prove that he can do all of those things and get all the little things right and be a true professional in the NFL. Guys, we have covered all of the key takeaways as far as I can see them. We don't have anything to add to, you know, Zach Wilson getting hurt or, you know, scrubs versus scrubs in some of these games where nothing really happened. We are going to come back middle of the week with our midweek big show. We will have a big guest to help break down all of the big topics happening in the league this week, all the latest news, and we will pick, well, no, we're not going to pick the preseason games, I don't think. When we get into the actual season, we'll pick every single game. But for right now, just stay subscribed, stay following us on Twitter at 3OutPod, on Instagram at 3OutPod. Go to 3OutPod.com, our website. All of our feeds, all of our content go up there. Make sure you subscribe. And then, hey, in your podcatcher, once you subscribe, rate and review. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. It helps grow the pod, helps let people know we do great work twice a week, as we have been for the last couple of years. We are starting our third season of twice a week coverage. We cannot wait to get to it right here on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast.